character. I'm going to speak of character. Where it comes from, what it is. Character is in the divine or pure intellect. To give you an example of character, there's the character, the divine character or idea of a horse. The horse has no distinction. There is the divine character or idea of man and of woman. And the divine character is the potential that every man and every woman is endeavoring to realize by their living life. It is a divine idea, therefore it is of God. And no one can deny that every man and every woman is endeavoring to realize some sort of ideal of either goodness or ambition or rightness, something that to each one is an ideal. But the extraordinary thing is that no particular man ever realizes the particular character of man. Being a divine idea, every manifestation of man is an attempt to realize more and more of the character of man. Nobody knows what that character is because it's in the divine intellect. It's held there, motionless. And the projection of man from life to life, living life to living life, comes through there. And that is its potential. That's what you are doing. Really, what you think, what you work out, what you rationalize, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Has no bearing on what I'm talking about, the realization of the character. Because it's not you that's going to realize it. It's just that it has to be done as everybody's life. So there is a sense in man, the character of man seems to be related to nobility, a nobleness of spirit, of character. And every man, in his own way, is endeavoring to realize or be an aspect of that, nobility. His interpretation of it, each man, individual man's interpretation of it, is quite different. Because some think that they should be like Jesus, live like Jesus, or like Buddha, for instance. And that's all part of the endeavor to realize the ideal, or the idea, the character. It's part of it, but it hasn't succeeded yet, because it'll never be succeeded. But we have to keep trying. Now let's take the idea of horse, the character of horse. Man thinks that by interbreeding horses, as he's been doing for thousands of years, the different strands that he breeds for racing, for doing this, for doing that, he thinks that he is doing it. But really, he is simply an impulse of the life force that is helping horse to be realized in matter here, in this present. Because every aspect of horse is, in combination, is a part of the character of horse. The same with dogs. So man has bred spaniels, so it is, with the long ears, as gun dogs, and then he's bred sheep dogs who can round up the sheep. And the whole thing is the character of dog that is evolving. And man is simply one of the impulses, like water is to the tree, that allows it to change, or the air or the pollen drifting on the air. All these things allow everything to change, to start to express more and more the idea in the divine intellect of horse or tree or man or woman. There's no person in it. Everyone is a contributing factor, an impulse, part of the impulse, helping the trees, helping the animals to realize more aspects of the divine character. And so there are various characters in man, in particular men. We seem to regard only the noble as the character, but then I don't know that that's true. Because no man is all noble, is he? He endeavors to be more noble, but does he? He also endeavors to be more rich. He endeavors to have more power. He endeavors to control more men. He endeavors to control women. All that is an endeavor for the character of man to be expressed in existence. Now, what this character is, we can't say. It can't be said what the character of horse is. This was first seems to have been said way back by Plato, but he never went into it in any great detail. The idea. I know more about it than Plato ever recorded that he knew, and that's what I'm endeavoring to tell you now. So every living life, not as a reincarnation, but as a recurrence of what I have told you, is the divine imprint in you. Now there's the divine imprint in the life that is inside of you, which you can't name, you can't particularize. You are life, so you just got to accept it, because when life withdraws, you're going to get sick or you're going to die. So you are life. And that life consists of a resonance or a vibration consistent with your self-knowledge from living life, or that life's self-knowledge. This is your identity, your real identity, not your name, not your house, not where you work, not your address and all that stuff which is projected, I guess, manifested out here by the mind. But your self-knowledge is what is carried forward from life to life, not the person. You'll never know about it. Not you who's here listening to these words. Not I. Not I who's saying them. I'll never know about it. Because it is a great, wonderful, wonderful process that's going on, which has no individuals, no persons in it, no individuals, no interpretations make any sense. It's just going on. And that's why everybody dies and everything dies. Because it's just going on. He can go on perfectly well without you. Perfectly well, without very long. Goes on perfectly well. But the point is that the imprimatur, now an imprimatur is an imprint, right? Imprimatur. Although the arta gives a certain authority to it. Imprimatur is an imprint. And an imprint is what we would call in another term a mark. And a mark is a character. So when writing first started, they started with marks for numbers and for hieroglyphics. Marks, which were characters. And so if at some level, A, B, C, D, E, and all the rest of it, is regarded as characters. Marks. Now, if we go back to your life, which is in that body now, it is imprinted with the character, the self-knowledge, that has been accrued or has been gathered in the living lives of that life. Although life is utterly and completely one, there is this extraordinary identification called self-knowledge as far as human beings are concerned. So you see, that is your character, is your self-knowledge. But your self-knowledge is not necessarily expressed, all of it, in this living life. What happens in this living life is you are mostly given situations, conditions to cope with to the best of your ability, and me too, no exceptions, to the best of your ability. And it is that coping somehow or other which brings about this indescribable self-knowledge. And that self-knowledge, so is your character. You have a character, you have that character behind your living life now. That character which is in the life inside of you is behind your living life now. But you have to live. There's a light from that character. There's a light from that life that shines into your living life, which is a manifestation of body and mind and emotions. So the light of your character, your self-knowledge, does shine in and influence things. But basically, you have to cope with what has been left behind by your mother and father and grandfathers and all the rest of humanity. You have to cope with that. And in coping with it, you then generate self-knowledge, but we don't know what it is. It begins with knowledge of yourself, obviously. Self-knowledge begins with knowledge of yourself. So yourself consists of anger, resentment, sexual frustration, mood, emotion, and all those various negative emotions. That is yourself. So self-knowledge obviously consists in the first instance of the knowledge that anger is myself. But then yourself is what you've got to cope with. Yourself is the problem. So by coping with anger, how do you cope with anger? Do you suppress it like people do? Do you get angry and then want revenge? This is a human nature way of doing it, that your parents did or whoever died and left all that stuff behind. That is the natural human nature reaction. Get revenge. Get even with. Pay back. And so, but self-knowledge of anger is to see that anger is myself, which is what I have to cope with. And by ridding myself of anger, I then have self-knowledge. Because as I rid myself of this condition of anger, which is an entity, let's say, a psychic entity that possesses me from time to time, as I get rid of it, that contortion called anger, because it's a psychic contortion, a psychic twist in the psyche, holding together like that, that's what anger is, it's force. And as I get rid of anger, I release the flow of life or intelligence more through the body, because it takes a lot of life, a lot of power to support anger. An angry man or an angry woman, an emotional woman, a moody woman, an emotional man, emotional woman, all this great personal driving requires a great deal of energy. And when we get rid of anger, moods, frustration, and all the rest of it, all those twists in the psyche are released, and more power comes in. Now, not power to do anything, not more power to be more ambitious and kill more people or invent more lethal inventions, not that sort of power, but more self-knowledge power, more power to overcome any negative, self-doubt, for instance, more power to overcome fear, because self-doubt and fear are still distortions in the psychic flow. So as I know myself, then myself disappears as attachment to anger and those other emotions. And then there is more self-knowledge, because as I dissolve this thing, it reveals knowledge to me. And that knowledge is self-knowledge. Whereas what the world worships is information and knowing. Like all the university professors and all the people, the poor students out there having to study all that information and knowing, there's no self-knowledge in it. But the action of having to study, having to go through the pain of it, or the enjoyment of it, and the exams and the flaking out and all the rest of it that happens, that is coping with the human condition, which has been left behind by all the people that die, and each of us has a portion of that. And as I give that up, or first of all by understanding it, and then by dissolving it as a force in me, that generates self-knowledge. Now, as far as I can see, the final self-knowledge that's possible here is the knowledge of the vastness of the power behind the whole of existence. Because to begin with, the power behind your manifested living body is life. I don't know whether anyone has ever said that before, or whether anyone has ever really realized it. I don't know that, because I haven't heard anything about it. I've heard about worships of all sorts of things, but not the obvious fact that this body is sustained by the power of life, as is everybody sustained by the power of life. Now, is that true? Or is Barry Long made it up? If you're in a motor car and you run out of petrol, you run out of power. But it's not just the petrol that's doing it. You've got to have the battery to create the spark that makes the explosion of the petrol in the engine that gives the force to drive the wheels. But do we have to get into that complication in regard to your living life, which apparently all the therapists, all the psychologists, but they only exist because man is in such a mess of lack of self-knowledge. Is it so difficult to grasp the fact that empowering that body now, this very moment, that's allowing this body to speak, is life? And that as soon as life withdraws, the body gets sick, or partially withdraws. It's beneficence. The body gets sick. And as soon as life is there full, people are down there surfing and enjoying the day and romping around, enjoying the apparent power of their body. But they haven't got the power of their body. Their body's a force, because it takes force to jump around. But the power behind the jumping surely is obvious. It is life. So when the scientists and the photographers talk of life on Earth, are we really getting the message? Life on Earth is what is empowering your body, and the body of the animals and the body of all living things is empowered by life. But the scientists don't know anything about life, haven't got a clue. And it looks as though the biologists haven't got a clue either, because it's all about minutiae, I don't know what the word is, minutiae, this little thing and this little thing and this little thing, always external to you, that makes up the manifested body. But what about empowering the body? Now, does anybody want to argue that, please? What is empowering your body in the first instance? Do you think it was your breakfast? You know, the breakfast is a manifested complication that is there for us all to say, well, contains this many vitamins and this many things and this many things, and so we get vitamins and supplements and herbs and God knows what in our breakfast, and we have bran to do this and we have do, and these things work because the breakfast is a part of the body and the food is a part of the body, but it's not a part of life. Life is the empowering, because your brakes on your car could be not working too well, or the generator couldn't be working too well and you have to charge the battery, but while you've got petrol in it and you've got a spark, it runs sort of. And it might miss on two or three cylinders, but it gives you a bit of force to get around in. But it's the empowerment. Am I making sense, though? Sometimes when I get the reaction from you all, what it seems to be, I wonder if I'm making any sense at all. Am I making sense? Well, then, you have to grasp this, that you are empowered by life. And the life that is behind the empowerment of this particular living life until you die has an identification on it called self-knowledge. Something in the life that you are is resonating at a certain speed. Now, your life, the life that's in that body and the life in that body, is not necessarily resonating at the same speed, because the self-knowledge is not necessarily the same frequency of the same intelligence or same intensity as in another body. So all the life in it, in all things, is shimmering. Are you getting it? It's shimmering. Now, shimmering, if you get light shimmering, you get an extraordinary, and you put it all together, all the living life things together, what do you get? You get the shimmering of life in all living things, in the plants and everything. What do you think the world looks like when you only see life? Well, I'll tell you what it looks like. With all the plants and all the animals, including the human animal and everything, there's a great shimmering going on. And when you look at the table, you can't exclude the table, because there's a certain shimmering going on in there, a resonance. And you can't exclude anything, because when you really see what life is, what living life is, behind this manifestation of senses of seeing, hearing, and tasting, when you really see it, the whole of it is shimmering light. This more light, this less light, this more light, but all light. Shimmering with the character that has been realized through living, through all things. The character of tree is shimmering. All trees are shimmering with the light of tree, and then it's got its own shimmeringness. But then each tree is different. And I'm using rational words to try to describe something that is beyond rational description, but not beyond the intimation of. It's not a perception. It's a cognition. Cognition comes from the word gnosis, C-O-G-N-O-N-O. G-N-O comes from gnosis. And co means with gnosis, with knowledge. And what we go on is data, information, knowing from a crazy mind that puts things together and tries to work things out. And it can only work out how a motor car works or something like that. It can't work out love, life, truth, death, or God, which is what I'm talking about. The character behind each of you and me. Now, the extraordinary thing, I mean, that's extraordinary enough, isn't it? Okay. So the even more extraordinary thing than that, that in the divine intellect, which is way, way back inside of you, is the character of man and the character of woman, which has never been achieved and never will be achieved, but it is there in its supreme and superlative state as an idea in the divine intellect. And that is always there. And what drives us on is, even though we have our self-knowledge on the life that is resonating like this, this character, divine character, is resonating at such a speed that it's unbearable if you were to look at it. Because if you look at the sun and can't stand it with your senses, which you can't look at the sun and stand it. Nobody can without being blinded. That is an analogy of what it would be like to look at one of the ideas, or the idea of God's intellect. This is the divine design, part of the divine design behind it all. And so the self-knowledge is always driven to endeavor to reach the same speed of intelligence, let's say, of intelligence, as the divine intellect, its very beginning, its very reason for being. So man is always endeavoring through his living life to resonate to, he's not, because he's only trying to do what he wants to do. But inside, the imprimatur in the life is endeavoring to reach the speed of the divine idea. And that's what drives us on. So you see, it wasn't as simple as you thought it was, but it's terribly simple to me. It's terribly simple. But the human mind wants to complicate everything and introduced all the therapist's idea, the dietitian's ideas, all these other things' ideas, which are all part of living. And you take your chances and you take your... But it doesn't make any difference, because you're going to live or you're going to die. And you will be driven to eat the things that will kill you or that will help you to survive. You'll be driven to do that. But we play around having a bit of this and a bit of that and thinking this is going to do you good and that's going to do you good. And we are driven to do the things that will keep us alive, and we are also driven to do the things that are going to kill us. Because it's not that your life, it is life that is precious. But no body's precious. Nobody, or nobody would die. But life doesn't die. That's why it's precious. And you are life. But you have to get the picture. What's empowering your body? The breakfast you had this morning, would that be good enough for you? Your biology, would that be good enough for you? Do you want to have faith in the scientists who keep killing people with their inventions and will continue to do so, with all their latest rot that they're going on with? Do you want to have faith in them? Or can you get it? Can you get hold of the source? Ah, life. I do not know what thou art. I only know that thou art. But what thou art, I do not know. But thou dost empower my body. And I love thee, whatever thou art that I do not know. That's because life is God in the first instance. Only in the first instance. Because God is such extraordinary magnificence that there is no end to God. And so when I say life is God in the first instance, then I'd have to say to you, second instance, God is intelligence. Because life is not intelligent. Now then I'd have to lecture on and go on and on, well, why isn't life intelligent, Barry? Well, you'll have to get this, you know. I can't give it all to you. But life is not intelligent because life is simply the power to live again, that which has died, to live again. So how do you think that you are born? You know, the life in you is reborn. It's because you have the drive, the enormous drive, powered by the divine intellect, to live again so that you can become more perfect through self-knowledge. And so all life, a cycle of life is death, and then to birth, and then living, and then death, and then a process that goes on here, and then back to birth again. It is an impulse to live again. All living things, foxes, everything, sheep, everything, driven to live again. But as a sheep is not a sheep, it's life. As the life is behind the sheep, doesn't matter how many sheep are killed, how many sheep are being killed today to feed people who eat sheep. So sheep are not precious. Bodies are not precious, or we wouldn't kill them, would we? It's the life that's precious. And you've got to get the grasp of this, the vastness of it all, the integrity of it all. Integrity means the oneness, the purpose of it all, the integrity, the rightness of it all. You've got to get this. But all we do is find, oh, this is not good and that's not good and this is not good, because we love to worship the not good. We are persons, and the person has got to die, because the person is the cause of most of our problems. And you don't matter that much, the person. Doesn't matter that much. But it's been made by God, driven, the intelligence that's in the body, the instinctual intelligence, has by whatever it is, has driven the intelligence that's in the body, because the body's far more intelligent than I am, and I have arisen out of the body, and I'm surveying the entire scene through my senses, but everything's really happening inside, and I can't see inside, because I'm an external intelligence. Always related to my job, my mother, my father, my lovers, and where I'm going tomorrow and what I'm doing for holidays. And it's my body that does all these things, but I am the intelligence in it. And I'm so unintelligent. Well, aren't I unintelligent? I mean, if you can work out Einstein's theory, does that make you intelligent? Really? Or is it to know the vastness of it all, to just grasp the vastness of it all, like now? And that's it. You are not striving for anything as a person. You and your mind and emotions are not doing anything, and nor am I. It is just happening, driven by the divine, perfect, idea. Through this whole process of living, dying, being born, and then the whole process goes on, whole process, because you're not going to live, are you? If you live to 140, you're still not going to live, are you? To 200. You're still going to die. You've got no hope. Nothing that you've ever done is ever going to last. But something is lasting. Something has purpose in it. Thank God it's not due. There's not something to do with my mind or emotions. Thank God for that. It is something beyond my mind and emotions called self-knowledge. And that's why in this teaching it is suggested to you that you dissolve this corruption of anger and moods and emotionality. Dissolve it so that you can get the full flow of life, which makes you intelligent, to come through this brain and this mind, and so enlighten the mind, because you're not holding on to anything that's not real. And whatever is thought by the human mind or held by the emotions is not real. It is only an impediment, an obstruction. So all your thoughts, all your sciences, all your devotion to science, all your devotion to anything, your attachment to it, is purely part of the great waste of time which living life is. Except that, through it all, this wonderful process of self-knowledge, which cannot be accessed, is going on. Now, nobody's ever told you that truth before. And I don't know of anyone alive, master or anything, that can tell you that truth. Only I know it and can talk about it forever. If only I have the listening ears to hear it. But you, it's yours. It's yours. It's not just mine. It's yours. It's your life. It's your life. And if you love the God immanent in you, the God inside you, you are loving that wonderful light of self-knowledge, which is there, shimmering, shimmering. So people see the light, don't they? What do you think they see the light of? The sun or something? It is the shimmering light. It's the light at the end of the tunnel that people often see in near-death experiences, the life at the end of the tunnel. What do you think it is? It's the shimmering or white light of your own self-knowledge, of your own life, as it has been accrued as self-knowledge to date. What's the explanation of all that stuff? Well, I've just told you what the explanation is. And the Christians sing, and they all sing it so heartily and so unconsciously. Lead kindly night, light beneath the encircling gloom. Now, I don't know of any gloom. I don't know of any gloom except my stupid mind and emotions and beliefs. That's my gloom, and then I need the lead kindly light to lead me on when I should be leading the light on, or I should be part of the light. All this talk of gloom, of blackness and unhappiness is all talk of a mind and emotions that is completely materialistic and intellectual. And it's a pity that we've only got to, I've got to use the word intellectual for scientists and mathematicians and all the rest of it, who love this intellectual mind mental stuff. When the intellect, I don't know what science says about the intellect. I don't think they have any clue about what the intellect is. I don't think they have a clue what I'm talking about. But I have. That's all that matters. And I will endeavor to impart it to you. Because what you hear, when you hear something and you are in my presence here, something happens to you. And it doesn't matter whether you believe it, whether you accept it, whether you grasp it or not, doesn't matter. The fact is that it is going back to where it came from. For that's what listening hearts are for. Listening hearts, not just listening ears, listening hearts are for. So that which is within can be affirmed from that which is without. So mostly our anger is affirmed for us from without. Things go wrong over here. So we're angry about it, and so things go wrong again, so that it can affirm the anger within me. But what about self-knowledge that speaks to you and says, I am affirming your self-knowledge. I am affirming your love of God. I am affirming your love of life. I am affirming the fact that your body is empowered by an extraordinary thing we cannot even describe called life, which is in every living thing. That is affirming your self-knowledge. Because the external has to affirm that which is within. Now close the eyes, please, and be still. This extraordinary thing, life, is resonating inside of you. I call it the flow of life, but it's not even flowing. It's too magnificent for that. It's just there. But it's renewing every moment. And that's what's empowering the body. And that life is a light, different light to the sunlight, absolutely different, lighting up the darkness within, which is the subconscious. And the more that I can just be still and focus inside on the well-being which is provided, so that I have something with my restless mind and emotions, something to focus on. The well-being in my body is provided as a means to focus within on. And it is there in the body, and nobody can deny it. So be still and know that I am God. And don't put your eye out here on the speaker. Be still and know that I am God is an old quotation from the Jewish prophets. But of course the human nature would put it like they did on Jesus. Come unto me, all ye who labor. And so they say Jesus means Jesus instead of God. Be still and know that whatever it is God. And God has many, many levels. But each level is pure and beautiful and more light, lighter and lighter, which dispels the darkness of gloom and emotions and doubts and fears by the very love of it. Now open the eyes and leave the focus. You can have the focus in both places as much as possible on the stillness of the life within. And then you enter the world of the senses where everything moves and changes. And if you want any more affirmation regarding intellect, the divine intellect, the human intellect, or the divine idea or ideas, then I commend to you my Origins of Man and the Universe, which, if it speaks of origins of man and the universe, it must be saying the origins of man and the universe. One would suspect that, wouldn't one?